We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
You're like a photograph. You never quite tell the truth. But if I can make you laugh, maybe you'd cut loose. You're like a Polaroid. You're too quick and too bright. But if I could keep my eyes open when you flashed, you'd see the light. You're like a flower that bloomed too soon. We got one thing in common, we both love you.
From his time at the University of Illinois until last spring, singer-songwriter Jay Bennett was always finding artists to perform with on stage and in the studio. The Chicago area native was likely best known for his tenure and well-publicized dismissal from the successful band Wilco. But he was also well-known in the Champaign area music scene. Bennett was living locally when he died unexpectedly on Memorial Day weekend. On what would have been his 46th birthday, friends will gather in Chicago this Sunday for a celebration of Bennett's life and music. AM 580's Jeff Bossert spoke with his longtime collaborator, Edward Birch, on what allowed their relationship to thrive from day one.
The collaboration probably came together as I began to express more interest in some of the solo work and tapes that Jay was working on, that he started passing them to me, and I would listen to them, and I liked them, and I had suggestions about them. And then not too long after that, he began approaching me. He's like, well, hey, why don't you come over and put some tracks on this? That's where the collaboration began. The work on the Palace record began probably late 94, early 95, really at Jay's suggestion. I think he was looking for something that would distract me and take my mind off of stuff that I wasn't wanting to deal with. You know, so it was like, he figured, well, it's a lot cheaper than you going into therapy, so why don't we work on making a record instead? And so just little by little, we worked on songs and worked on tracks and then sort of really hit it hard to finish it up in August of 2001, shortly after Jay got the word that he was being let go from Wilco.
Let's go back a little bit, too. When you first met, where were you? I mean, not so much location-wise, but where were you in your life?
I was just finishing up work in a grad program at the university. And by finishing up, meaning I figured out that I'd had enough of it and I didn't actually want to finish. So I was like, ended up being one unit shy of actually having my master's, but I didn't want to do that anymore. Jay had actually been in that same program, although he was a few years ahead of me. And so he knew where I was coming from, although he was, I think, more taken to it, and I think ultimately did finish that particular master's. I just was very unsure about what I wanted to do with my life, and I don't know necessarily that that has changed in 15 years, but I'm a little more comfortable with it now, because it was more like, because we don't have anything else that we're wanting to do right now, we might as well do this because we enjoy it. And so we began working on some recordings, and then he gets the call to join Wilco. Then, you know, obviously he gets busy with recording and touring and all that kind of stuff. And so whenever he's home, whenever there are these moments to work on stuff, then we would do so.
Was it bittersweet when Jeff Tweedy and had recruited him for Wilco? Was it a little rough on you?
Not at all, because as we were working on recording songs, we weren't doing it thinking that, we weren't even sure if this thing was going to come out. You know, it was like we were just doing it because it was something we wanted to do. Other than making something that we were happy with, it never occurred to us that someone else might actually want to hear what we were up to. And once Jay had his connection with Wilco, I think that made it a little bit more likely that people actually would want to hear what we were doing. I would say that maybe the only weird, if it's even at all weird, moment was when Jay came back one time and played me the version that Wilco were working on of his song My Darlin', as it was a track that we had also recorded versions of and had a version in progress well before that.
So sleep now, my darling, and I will keep all the bad dreams away. And breathe now, breathe easy, and I will say all the right things to say.
Have some opportunities while he was touring and recording with them to come back and do songs and maybe give your stuff a little more publicity, legitimacy?
I think there were certainly times that he and I played together during his tenure in Wilco where the fact that that association could get tagged to what we were up to helped bring some more people out. And because we didn't release anything that we were doing until after Jay is out of Wilco. And because Yankee Hotel and our record, coincidentally, and it really was complete coincidence, came out on the same day.
Can you say off the top of your head how many different instruments that he could play? Because I know it's a lot.
I think the short answer would be almost anything he picked up. And I remember when we were making the liner notes for Palace that his instrumental credit on that was probably 20, 25 compared to mine, which was maybe like 10. Or his might have even been more. But in terms of all the stuff he could play, pretty much anything. And if he couldn't, by the end of the day, he would be able to.
When did you last work together prior to his passing?
I worked with him on the Magnificent Defeat album. We did several songs there, and again, that musical citation thing comes up because, like, we work on one song. He's like, okay, I want this to feel like Fleetwood Mac's Secondhand News, or there's a song that he and David Vanderveld, who were working a lot together on that record, one day in the studio had a contest where they both wanted to see who could write the best version of a 1960s Bee Gees song, and Jay won with his I'm Feeling Fine, I think that was on that record, and David and I did the harmonies with him so that we could get the more of the Bee Gees sound.
Oh, people always ask me why. Oh, what's the use? Why even try? Oh, in a sense, I do agree. But you know, everything's not up to me. And
that was the last time working with him as far as recording goes. The last time that I performed with him would have been up at the Hideout in Chicago right before I moved to Texas. We had a going away show where I had a bunch of musician friends come out and play with me, and Jay was one of them. And then I was talking with him on the phone the week before he died, if even that, and we were discussing both how we might approach doing another album proper and specifically how we were going to approach working on a song that we had been asked to do for a Guided by Voices tribute.
So the Hideout is where you're performing.
Yes.
in honor of Jay this weekend.
Yes. So on November 15 at the Hideout, which is, of course, the last place that he and I performed together on stage, I thought that would be a very fitting place to gather a bunch of people and have a show on his birthday. We're planning that the show will be a benefit for organizations who are working on musician healthcare issues, which I think is important, you know, because if we had better healthcare structures going on in this country, you and I might not be having this conversation right now. So I think that he would very much support us approaching a benefit in that manner.
Tell me about songs that weren't finished.
Songs that weren't finished. was on Jay's second Undertow album, and it was certainly, I won't say a leftover, but a remaining track from the Palace Sessions. Palace at 4 a.m., as it currently stands, might actually even be a bit too long, but I think Jay was certainly of the mind, and I sort of followed along with him on this, that we were so excited about so many of the songs we were working on, we wanted to get as many as we could into that first album, and inevitably there were going to be things that got left out even as we tried to cram as much in as we could, and one of the songs that got left out was songs that weren't finished. That comes from some of the earliest sessions. The basic tracks are us sitting up in our old loft in downtown Champaign, and you hear these, you know, crazy noises in the background at quiet parts in the song, because we weren't really thinking about it when we first started recording these demos. You know, we would leave the windows open, and so you'd hear birds chirping, or you'd hear beer bottles crashing when they're emptying from the blind pig, or whatever it might be.
Well, it's 4 in the morning and you're lying in bed, and songs you can't whistle are still stuck in your head. And it's 6 in the morning here, and I'm 12 hours from you. I'm 6 hours full of lies and 6 hours from the truth about songs that weren't finished in time.
And I'm guessing we have some unreleased material from Jade.
There's a lot of unreleased material. On the one hand, it will feel somewhat weird to put out and finish a track when he's not here, but sometimes that's just how you have to approach it. And he was pretty much close to finished with an album that, at least when he was working on it, had the title Kicking at the Perfumed Air. I believe they're still going to keep that title, and my understanding is that there are plans to get that album put out. My understanding is that certainly that album is going to see the light of day, and hopefully some more of his unreleased songs will eventually come out as well, because when you're as good of a songwriter as Jay was, even the bad songs tend to be pretty good.
AM 580's Jeff Bosser talked with Edward Birch about his longtime friend and musical collaborator Jay Bennett. On Sunday, Birch will share a stage with several performers at the Hideout in Chicago to honor the late musician. More information is available online at hideoutchicago.com.
Earth and Sky.
I think we need to have a new kind of agriculture, kind of a third agriculture, if you will, between big agribusiness kind of commercial approach to agriculture and the lessons from organic and local systems.
You're listening to John Foley, director of the Institute on the Environment at the University of Minnesota. He's envisioning a reinvention of global agriculture, the creation of a hybrid of industrial and organic farming.
Can we take the best of both of these and invent a more sustainable and scalable agriculture?
Foley said that the large amount of food produced by industrial farms is needed to feed a population projected to reach 9 billion by 2050. But he added, those farms' use of resources isn't sustainable.
70% of the water we use goes into agriculture. A third of our greenhouse gas emissions are caused by agriculture and land use clearing.
On the other hand, he said, while organic agriculture, farming without the use of synthetic pesticides or fertilizers, might have a lighter impact on the environment, he's skeptical about whether it can produce enough food.
Organics feed about 1% of our global calories. So that's not enough. What we could do, though, is take the lessons of kind of stewardship of organic matter and soils from organic methods and scale them up with commercial tools.
I'm Lindsay Patterson. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Support for WILL comes from the Champaign County Humane Society, promoting animal welfare since 1951. Pet adoptions are available from the Humane Society, a member of Community Shares of Illinois, a choice for payroll donation at work, on the web at cs-il.org.
2 minutes before 3 o'clock, this is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana, online at will.illinois.edu.